Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This week on Catch and Shoot 2.0, we're getting close to the end of the regular season, and that means the start of the NBA playoffs. One team, though, is quietly going about their business, and that's the LA Clippers. We'll be checking in with someone who follows Kawhi, PG-13, and company. But first, Darlene, let's get to it.
Catch and Shoot 2.0 is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. Catch and Shoot 2.0 goes well with both red and white and is perfect with the workout of your choice. Our hosts are Aaron Berlin, a former Kansas Jayhawk who believes the Orlando Magic will win the championship. Eventually. His partner is Otto Strong, a man who has covered the NBA since before Dennis Rodman got his first tattoo. Fellas.
And welcome to Catch and Shoot 2.0. I am Aaron Berlin, along with my partner. He is the one and only. His name is Otto Strong. Otto, what's going on, my man?
It's all good. It's all good. I'm getting excited. We're only, you know, down to inside of 10 games. It feels like we actually have some like stuff's getting serious.
It's weird. It's May and the NBA playoffs have not begun yet.
Yeah, I the calendar thing is always going to be vexing for me while we're in this stage, but you know, it is what it is. What do you like? What is on the tip of your tongue? What are you thinking about at this point, this juncture?
So the thing that I think we're all trying to figure out is, and I'll say this, and I'm 100% sure about this. Comparing LeBron James' comments about the play-in game to the rhetoric he said last year in regards to the Blazers, the Grizzlies, and all those other teams that were battling for a playoff spot and saying just let them all play is not fair to LeBron James, right? Like those two things are completely different scenarios than what he's going through right now. But at the same time, LeBron, be better than the 7 seed. Like that's all there is to it, right? You are the NBA champion. Don't complain about being in a play-in game. We can talk about this. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, look, it's not like you woke up one day and you said, "Oh, there's a play-in game." Like this is what it is. This is what it, you know, this is the way they drew it up. So, I get that some people don't like it, but I will say this. For the fans, I think, provided that no one gets hurt, which is always the caveat on everything, I guess you could always say, but provided no one gets hurt, it's going to add a tremendous amount of drama, not just because, you know, are you 7, are you 10, depending on who you're rooting for, where your allegiance is, are you a 6 and you escape having to get, go through the playing games? I mean, there's going to be basically elimination games, every night, basically starting now. Going for the next, 2 weeks, which is basically what I imagine the NBA would want for obvious reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at this. If you're looking at just the Eastern Conference today, mm-hmm. there's only two teams eliminated. One, the Orlando Magic, who, if it's not for Cole Anthony, like who's following that team right now?
Right.
And the Detroit Pistons. But as far as 7, 8, 9, and 10 goes, you have a lot of intrigue. The Celtics, the Hornets, the Pacers, the Wizards. And then the Heat are kind of there as well. So, like, these teams who are perfect example, right? Like, not to just get sidetracked, but we're going to talk to Law Murray, who covers the Clippers for the Athletics today. And full disclosure, we've already taped this interview, but there's a part in this interview where he's talking about, well, the Clippers know what they're going to be, right? They're going to be 4 or 5. So it is what it is for them. Like, they have a general idea of where they're going to be seated. These teams, 5 through 10, don't know. Like, these final games matter for them. And I think that's what the NBA has been trying to get at, to where they can have a larger pool of participants, of teams that still have a chance to play meaningful games at the end of the calendar.
Well, yeah. So one quick thing: Clippers are actually either a 3 or 4. That's you know where they're going to wind up. But to your point, you know, in the East, I'm looking at, you know, for all those long suffering Knicks fans, the fact that they could even be a 4 seed and have home court, but you know, on their heels, Atlanta and Miami, you know, just a game and a half back, and the Celtics, 2.5 back. So there is certainly, you know, high drama up and down the standings, and even at the tippy top, you know, in the East. Got the Sixers and the Nets, so separated by a half a game, and in the West, the Suns and Jazz are basically, you know, going mano a mano. So, look, I think it's going to create a lot of excitement. I get it that some players don't like it or aren't down with it, but you know, this was always a fans league, and and here we go.
Here's my question for you.
Yeah,
would the players be more on board with it if this happened in a year that was not a shortened offseason? Like if they had a normal off season of 5 or 6 months,
I'm going to say most players, I'm going to say no. And the reason why I don't think their tune would change is because, you know, as well as I do, there's a certain something in it, you know, your normal year when April 1st is the 2-week countdown to the end of the regular season and the playoffs begin in the middle of April. So I think that players, you know, they've played, it's been a long season, you know, starting back in October on normal time, normal schedule, and they go all the way through. And so April is in their mind, that's their time to rest and recoup. And maybe you're not doing back-to-backs. If you're in the top 3, top 4, top 5, look, you could be a 6 seed and be relatively secure that you're going to make the playoffs and, you know, enter a certain kind of mode, shall we say. Can't do that now. Can't do that. Like who, if you, no one really wants to be in a play-in game. Like, you know, like even if I'm the defending champ, LA Lakers, do I really want to put my whole season, my whole playoffs on the line in a single game against a team that has perhaps absolutely nothing to lose? Like, no, I don't want to do that. So to answer your question, no, I don't think that their tune would change if they were coming off a full season of regular rest.
And don't forget, Otto, they're playing 10 less games than they typically do. So like you have to make some kind of an adjustment for, you know, a team that may have went on a run in the last 10 games of the year because they're not getting those contests, right? Like I get that it's a shortened season. It's a condensed time frame, but you're also playing less games. So you need some kind of barrier to, you know, juggle it out for these bottom teams.
Yeah, I mean, look, I get that. But at the same time, there's also the reason why there are fewer games is because there's much less rest between the end of the finals of what, you know, the last season, I'll call it, which obviously LeBron played in all the way to the end. So I get why he's going to be, you know, feeling a certain kind of way. Where do you think the Lakers are going to wind up? In terms of the 1 through 8, where do you think? I mean, forgetting how they'll do in the postseason, you think they'll actually have to play in a play-in game?
I don't, but I'm worried about them. Yeah. And the reason is we talk a lot about playoffs. You're only as good as who's available, right? Like the most important thing for any player is your availability. Like if you're not available, you can't help your team. And so I'm worried that, look, LeBron's missed significant amount of time. He came back. Mm-hmm. He's not playing tonight. We're recording this on a Monday. So it's time to start being concerned about that these injuries that LeBron is accruing are starting to affect him in a way that I don't think we've ever seen before, right? Like LeBron missed what he sat out like the final 20-30 games 2 years ago. It was when that Lakers team wasn't going anywhere. They weren't mm-hmm. making the playoffs. He was fully healthy last year in the bubble. This is a player, and this is someone who's defied father time, unlike anyone that we've ever seen. But I'm worried that the injuries are starting to catch up. And if you're a Lakers fan, and if you're a member of that Lakers front office, I think you're a little concerned that these are starting. Now, it could also be that the Lakers brass is not concerned about where this team's going. They know they're going to make the playoffs, and they're trying to get LeBron as much rest as possible because it's the same thing like you just said. It's a condensed season. He doesn't need to be playing all these games. So if we can rest him a game or two where it's beneficial for him to make sure that he's available in the playoffs, then we're going to do it. But the way this team has slid, I'm concerned.
Oh, I'm definitely concerned too. I mean, like, If you're the Lakers, the worst case scenario, I mean, like the worst case scenario is you're going to lose all the rest of your games, but you know, let's be realistic here. So, you know, they wind up a seventh seed and they have to go through the playing game. All right. So they get, you know, if the standings are the way they are right now, they would host the Grizzlies. And then if they happen to lose that game at home, then they would face the winner of the Warriors and Spurs for the eighth spot. Like if you can't go, you know, win one of those two games, then you got no business being in the playoffs. And I get why, you know, LeBron and others would probably say, well, look, you know, we've got a whole body of work here. You know, we would any other year we would have been the seventh seed and, you know, let the chips fall where they may in the postseason, in the regular postseason. But look, that's the Lakers. That's their story. Like, so there's another guy in the West that I'm also a little bit concerned about. And he's much younger, has a lot less miles, but and he's also a hell of a player. And that is, of course, Luka Doncic of the Dallas Mavericks. You know, he's got 15 technical fouls. This is a guy, like, I think the Mavs are fine. I think they're going to make the postseason. They're in the five spot right now. They're tied with Portland and with the Lakers, but they really have an easy schedule. They've got, I think, Cleveland twice, and they've got a couple of other winnable games at the end of the season. But still, Luka is the kind of guy who can lose it in an instant over something that's like kind of silly and ticky-tacky, and they just are not a team that can afford to have him out for any amount of time. So, does the Luka technical foul thing get you a certain kind of way?
Oh, absolutely. It concerns me if I'm a Mavericks fan. And you know, the first thing when we saw this story and we saw that if he gets another one, he's going to have to sit and serve a one game suspension. The first thing that came into my mind was, you know, we've had two of your fellow colleagues at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram on, and they've both said the same thing. The biggest concern with Luka Doncic is his immaturity in situations where people get under his skin and they ruffle his feathers, right? Like they say that he has a tendency to show his age, which, you know, for someone who's played professional basketball at some level since he was 16 years old, it's kind of a surprise because at some point you just play enough games where it's like, whatever, I've done this before, I've been here. And playoff basketball, and we've spoke about this numerous times, playoff basketball, especially in games 3, 4, and 5, gets really intense. And it's not just because the stakes are higher. It's because by the time you get to that point, not only have you played, what, if it's a divisional opponent, you played 4 or 5 games against them already through the year. If it's just a conference opponent, you've played them multiple times already as well. So they know you. They know your sets. They know what defense you're running. They know what bothers you. And if I'm a playoff team and say I'm the Clippers and I'm going up against Luka in the first round, I know how to piss him off, right? I know how to ruffle his feathers. And by games three or four, I'm already planting the seeds to get those technical fouls because I know I can get to him. And so if I'm a Mavs fan, I'm incredibly concerned about that because he can say that, hey, it's just a regular season thing. I'm going to keep my emotions in check. It's not going to bother me. But come on, man. If his team's facing elimination and, you know, maybe like Kawhi says something in passing that he knows is just going to be that final little thing that presses his button, you know that's a veteran move by Kawhi.
Well, it's a veteran move, but the guy who that really scares me as a Mavs fan would be Patrick Beverley. nobody gets under guy's skin more than Patrick Beverley.
But all right, you want to go ahead and talk some Clippers basketball with someone who knows a lot more about the Clips than we do?
Absolutely.
Let's do it.
Hey, today we are pleased to have with us Law Murray, who covers the Los Angeles Clippers for The Athletic. Law, how you doing?
I feel great. Good to see you guys here this afternoon.
Cool. So little history. So we go back a little bit. Our paths overlapped at ESPN, and now obviously we're both in different places. I'm happy to see you over at The Athletic and doing with the Clippers now for, I guess, what, since you said the start of the year?
Yeah, since January. Really thrilled to have been at ESPN and really just blessed to be at The Athletic right now.
Cool. So now you're over there and you're covering a team that I mean, like Aaron and I have talked about the Clippers and whether we're believers or not, but I mean, if you're just going to look at the recent body of work, they had won 11 of 12. However, they've dropped the last few games. And so I'm wondering, what Clippers team are we getting?
Well, you're probably going to get a Clippers team that's closer to the one that was reeling off those wins in a 20-day span where they didn't have back-to-back days off. It's crazy that they finally get 2 days off, and then they went into New Orleans. They get smacked. They get a day off. They went into Phoenix. A lot on the line as far as standings, and they didn't come out ready to play that game. But the vibes were good because Patrick Beverley came back in he came back to join the team on the road trip at the end of the road trip, not back in the lineup just yet, even though he's close. And then they get two more days off. They come home. Kawhi Leonard's back in the lineup, but they lose to the Nuggets, which is the same thing that happened to begin the month of April. So it's like they had their worst week of the season as far as losses, but they had to feel good about a lot of things in terms of getting rest, feeling together, getting guys back. You know you're getting guys back, and you'd rather have these issues now than 3 weeks from now, obviously, when the playoffs start. So it's part of the process, but they do need to, you know, get back to the rhythm that they were in before the time off.
I was going to say, Law, that it's an interesting thing because this Clippers team right now is fourth in the Western Conference. And I thought you pretty much said it without saying it. This team doesn't necessarily care about what the seeding is right now. It's more important that they get everybody back and get them healthy, right?
Right. They were the 2 seed last year, the highest seed that they've ever had in their franchise history. They won the regular season series against the Nuggets 2-1. What did that do for them when the playoffs started? So in a season where you look at who's won, Phoenix didn't even make the playoffs last year. You know who was the 1 seed last year? The Lakers. The year before, the Lakers didn't make the playoffs the year before they got the 1 seed. So when it comes down to it, getting the regular season goals is different from everybody. The postseason goals are the same for everybody. So you have to take that context when you're entering the silly season of a third of the league already having their spot locked up, another third of the league, especially this year, in the bubble, right? The bubble of will you make it? Will you not? Will you be in the play-in? Will you not? And then the other third of the league, which is they're not going to be in the playoffs anyway.
So let's talk about one guy on the Clippers that really kind of just astounds me and confounds me all at the same time, Paul George. So, I mean, he's a guy like I just feel like, you know, just looking at some of the stats, 31 points, 7.5 boards, 5 assists. This is, you know, during that stretch when they had won 11 out of 12. As we all know, kind of he wasn't that guy in the postseason. So where is he now with his either development or outlook, or what's his state of mind?
His state of mind is way better now than it will ever be from the bubble in the playoffs, simply because they're not in the bubble. They're not in that isolating environment where some guys handled it really well, some teams handled it really well, and it was very clear that the Clippers as a team and Paul George as an individual did not. And he's got the right people around him. This is a really good team, a team that kind of internalized what happened early and kind of was like, let's move by it. But also you move by the past, but when you're dealing with the present and the future, you have to be active with that kind of accountability, that kind of support for a teammate. And they've been actively supporting Paul when he's done well. They've actively supported him when he's had his poor games or his poor stretches, when he was dealing with the toe injury that hampered him in February and interrupted his season a little bit going into the month of April. Paul's done a great job of being more mentally tough this year. I think the toe injury, which I was worried about when April started, has actually helped him lock in and understand what he needs to do to draw fouls, to finish through contact, to still find his shots, to still play his game, to still be effective when his shot isn't falling in terms of leading, being consistent, defending, and being on the floor with the second unit and playing without Kawhi Leonard. That's a lot, but that's what we're dealing with. This is a simple game sometimes, and it's a complicated game. So I'm very much looking forward to Paul George and what he has for the playoffs, but the key is he's not doing it by himself, and it's going to be critical for him to just stay in a rhythm and to stay consistent when the playoffs do get here.
Yeah, and it seems like injuries have really been a theme of this team all throughout the course of the season. You mentioned it, Kawhi Leonard at what, misses 9 of his last 10 games. He comes back Saturday. How hard has that been for this Clippers team to find some kind of a rhythm to get some of these guys on the floor at the same time? And is that the only thing that really Ty Lue is focusing on as the season comes to a close, is just trying to get these guys some kind of a run together?
I think Saturday night made it very clear that it's not just about getting guys healthy and available and on the floor. I mean, sometimes you can get a big lift out of that. I think the big lift from Kawhi coming back to play that outlier game, that 10th game was the Timberwolves game. He comes back, they blow the Timberwolves out, but then Kawhi goes back out for the rest of the month. Like, that's a lift, right? Saturday night when he came back against the Nuggets, it was, okay, he's back, but here are the complications with that. Guys who are used to playing a certain kind of role, a certain amount of minutes, being on a certain spot, they haven't been in that place. And playing the Timberwolves and playing the Nuggets are two very different scenarios. Like, the Nuggets are a team that plays slow. Obviously, they have the MVP, Nikola Jokic, and what he does on both ends of the floor. I think his offense is obvious, but what Nikola's presence does defensively is you're always going to – the Nuggets are big, you know. They're actually a really bad team defending in the paint, but for whatever reason, against a Clippers team that does not get a lot of shots in the paint to begin with, that doesn't draw a lot of fouls, they have a hard time taking advantage of whatever drawbacks the Denver defense has. And so it was a weird game Saturday night, but the good thing is it happened, it's over, and you have a foundation to build off of. They didn't have that foundation to build off of as far as Kawhi coming back last month, because he didn't stay back. He had to go back out. So now the goal for Ty is everyone's coming back. Patrick Beverley, he should be back this week, maybe as soon as Tuesday night against the Raptors. And the goal is figure out who can play with who should not be playing with who. This is your run. You figure that out now, so when the playoffs start, you're minimizing your – you're basically increasing your efficiency. You're minimizing your bad lineups, your chances of throwing guys out there who shouldn't be out there.
So to that end, who shouldn't be playing with who?
Well, Patrick Patterson has been really good, but it sounds like Ty is going to have to make a decision about Pat or DeMarcus Cousins until Serge Ibaka can come back. Ideally, neither one of those guys, former Kentucky Wildcats, are playing. Ty alluded to Terrence Mann and how well he's been playing for the course of the season. He's a great story as a late second round rookie, playing incredibly in terms of his shot development, his ability to play multiple positions, and he hasn't been at his best. So he's probably on the edge of the rotation. He's probably not going to play as much. Some guys who need to play more together are Rajon Rondo and Reggie Jackson. That's an example of Reggie's stretched as a starting point guard, but what they want to do with Reggie is have him be the scorer off the bench. Saturday night was an example of too many guys who didn't want to shoot. Nicholas Batum playing great, but didn't score, didn't scratch. He needs to be in a position where he's more aggressive. And Reggie, if he's on the second unit, he doesn't have to worry about being any bit of a table setter. The point guards would be Pat Beverley to start games, or John Rondo in relief of him and the close games. So it's more about who needs to be with who, and not necessarily who shouldn't be playing together, so to speak.
You know, Law, the thing I keep coming back to is this Clippers team last year, you know, they kind of got rid of Doc Rivers as a way to cleanse the palate of what this team could do. Ty Lue comes in, successful season, they're fourth in the conference. What has been the difference been? What kind of difference has he made from a coaching standpoint this year that you've been able to see in your short time covering the team?
Well, Doc was incredible as far as a person to come in and not just coach a team, but to lead a team, to be someone who was going to basically be almost like a face of the team along with the star players, had that a culture of accountability. And at the end, you know, 7 years is a long time for a head coach, especially when you're going through two massively different rosters, which Doc kind of oversaw. And there weren't a lot of options when the Nuggets came back from a 3-1 deficit to win that series against the Clippers. And so Ty Lue, you know, he's a disciple of Doc. He was with Doc for that first year where he was an assistant, and obviously this past year where they had to go through the bubble. Two very different and challenging experiences. When you talk about the ownership change and everything that went down that first year in 13, 14, and then last year, yeah, everything that went down with the hiatus of the season. So Ty has really just been an evolvement, if you will, of the same principles that Doc had as far as culture, but he's been more effective because he's able to reach these players in a different way than Doc could have. Doc was really in place to coach the Pat Beverly, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell Clippers. Ty is in a better position to coach the Paul George, Kawhi Leonard Clippers.
You know, that's interesting because this year has been a year unlike any other, right? Like, teams have had to really keep a tight circle when they travel because when the season started, the vaccine wasn't available, right? Like, we were playing in empty arenas. We were playing in areas where there wasn't a lot of outside attention. Do you think that helped Ty connect with this team a little bit faster than maybe a first year head coach could with the team?
I'm not sure I can say that because this season has been really challenging for everybody. It's been really challenging for the Clippers. We alluded to it earlier, all the ins and outs as far as the lineup. They didn't make a single transaction until the week of the deadline. But when you got prominent players in and out of the lineup, when you got a guy who you relied on and Marcus Morris Sr. not ready to start the season until 2 weeks in, and you are relying on guys who you had no idea would be contributing. Nicholas Batum, when he was signed, the thought wasn't that he was going to start every game before the All-Star break. You know, Terrence Mann, when this season started, he was supposed to be the 12th man, not someone who was going to overtake Luke Kennard in the rotation. Reggie Jackson was not promised to play, and now he's been a guy who's had to start almost every game after the All-Star break. I think that's been challenging. For Ty, though, I think it's just as a credit to what kind of person he is and what kind of coach and leader and preparer of basketball that he is. Like, he knows what he wanted to do, but it doesn't matter what you know sometimes if you can't reach the guys who need to execute. And I think Ty's been in a unique position. He's handled it really well. He's been incredibly poised, and he's going to need every bit of that because the second season is what – really matters for this team. And I think we learned one thing in Cleveland: whatever you thought of those Cavs teams, especially at the end of the years, he has another gear. As a coach, he has another gear. And I think I'm really excited to see if that carries over to the Western Conference.
Definitely want to see that second season, as you say. Now they got seven, I'm looking at the schedule now, they got seven games. And I only bring this up because I know you said that look, they're going to make the postseason. They're going to, you know, have a good season.
They clinched. They have to be in it.
Right. Exactly. They're there. They're there. We know they're there. But in terms of where they want to be seating wise, in terms of who they want to play, where do you see them falling?
I mean, they don't have much of a choice. They're locked into three or four because they had such a bad week last week. They can't get to one. One was a outside possibility if they swept last week. They didn't do that. Two was a really – they you know, it was the good side of a coin flip if they won in Phoenix. They didn't do that. And it wasn't even as much about the Suns. It's just the Suns are playing so well and the Clippers needed – they didn't have a margin of error to start with. And then they lose to the Nuggets. So that's opened up the fact that they're in four now. They're locked into three or four. They don't have the tiebreaker against the Nuggets, so the Nuggets would have to fall off, and they've won 9 out of 10 without Jamal Murray. Shout out to the Nuggets, for real, for real. That means that they're locked into playing who? The 5 or 6 seed, and you have three teams that are basically in the mix for that 5 or 6 seed, and that's the Mavericks, the team that they played last year but struggled against this year, and the Lakers, the defending champion. That's another quagmire. And then you've got the Trailblazers, who – the Clippers swept the Trailblazers during this regular season series, but as Paul George will be the first to tell you this year, he'll be the first to tell you what you see in the playoffs from the Blazers isn't necessarily what you're seeing right now in the regular season from them. So as far as preferences go, it last week kind of cleared things up. You don't have that much far up to go, and you're not going to drop that far down. And there's not many more teams in the conversation. It is not much of an option. You're going to probably face one of those three teams, and they're all going to present unique challenges in the first round.
Hey, as someone who's wearing a Blazers shirt right now, give me playoff Dame all day long, man. Give me that. Maybe not necessarily
that,
against.
I know you're saying that now. four straight wins. Heck yeah, you're going to say that now.
But here's the thing. Say the Clippers draw the Lakers in the first round. Is that almost a disappointment to the Clippers because they've had such a good year? And despite everything that's gone on with this Lakers team, if they draw the Lakers in the first round, would they be disappointed in that?
They shouldn't be, because for two reasons. Number one, the goal is to win a championship. How do you win a championship? By beating three teams in your conference first, end their seasons, and then end the season of the team that comes out the opposite conference.
You're going to have to play the best teams anyway.
Exactly. So what you worried about? What are you disappointed about? That's number one. That's a vacuum. That you could have threw any team in the league out, and I would have said that. But now let's be specific for reason number two. The Clippers are pretty damn good against the Lakers. They beat them this year after they got to watch them raise a banner with their best players available. And then, you know, Lakers fans were on a high when they went to Brooklyn and beat a Nets team that didn't have James but did have Kyrie for half of that game and had Kevin Durant. But they faced the Clippers the week before on Easter, and they were held to a season low 86 points by a Clippers team that, you know, they were missing two starters as well in Beverly and Ibaka. I mean, the Clippers, they shouldn't be worried about the Lakers, to be honest with you. It's disappointing if you lose to anybody in the first round. It might be disappointing to beat the Lakers in the first round because everyone's going to think that that's a big deal when it's not. It wouldn't even guarantee you the thing that everyone keeps saying that you haven't done yet, which is make the conference finals. So if anything is disappointing, it's that a win over the Lakers in the playoffs doesn't only means you've only beaten one opponent. So, you know, it will be that's the only disappointment. The Clippers need to worry about themselves, just like the Lakers need to worry about themselves. You know, everyone was like, oh, we'd love to see the Clippers in the – you sure about that? Right now the Lakers, they might be in the play-in for all we know.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's the thing. Like I said earlier, I see the stats. I see the standings. I see how they're doing. I see, the depth that they have, that how they're coached. On paper, you want to say, yeah, they're going to make it. They're going to be fine. But, like, to actually say, no, they're going to take out the Los Angeles Lakers, I get it. For all the reasons, the injuries, the mileage on LeBron, they're clearly not as deep as the Clippers are. But, until it happens, I just find myself like, nah. That's just where I'm struggling with it.
Otto, I would be right there with you. In a playoff series, do you want to deal with any version of LeBron James? Probably not. Yeah. You know, and the way, again, I talked about the Clippers and the Nuggets, right? And I discussed that the Clippers don't draw fouls. They don't get to the free throw line at a high rate. The Lakers, when they're at their best offensively, which they absolutely are not right now, mm-hmm. but when they're at their best offensively, the referees give them hella respect. And I'm not saying this as shade as I'm not saying this as someone who, you know, looks at who's refereeing a game beforehand and already is thinking of all the reasons why I got to complain while a certain team didn't win a game because of some cause. It's like, no, they do one of the best jobs in the league of defending without fouling. LeBron James, when Anthony Davis, when they play, they do a great job of defending without fouling. Those guys are almost never in foul trouble. That's going to affect your scoring margin because we're talking about free throws, a big part of the difference, because LeBron draws fouls when he's healthy. Anthony Davis draws fouls when you're healthy. You're losing that battle. How do the Clippers make up for that? Shooting the three, you know? And then that evens things out. You don't want to go into a playoff series where it's like, man, we're going to lose free throws every single game when we got to rely on hitting threes to make up for that. In a vacuum, that's where you're at. In this situation, hey, whatever. Like, someone's going to have to lose that series.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so I'm going to ask you a couple things. One, where do you think they're going to actually wind up? And then two, I want you to talk about the arena for a little bit, you know, whatever update you may have, because, you know, a lot of folks out there may not know about what's going on.
Well, in terms of where the Clippers end up, you mean, like, overall?
Postseason. Postseason, what round are they playing in? What are they doing? Are they champagne or are they?
I mean, look, I'm the type that, unlike some people, when I say something at the beginning of the season, I stick through it until the end. And I didn't think the Clippers would actually get out the first round because I thought they would face the Nuggets in the first round, and I thought that was a bad matchup. Yeah. So I'm actually going to stick with that. Like, I'm prepared for the Clippers not to get out the first round. We'll see how it happens. I think the matchups will dictate a lot. But I'm not really expecting anything – anything crazy there. That would be crazy in itself to a lot of people, but that's kind of where I've been at. And we'll see what happens from there. The arena, that's a much different question. Mm-hmm. All I know is that it'll be open in Inglewood in a few years. And the last thing I really heard was a couple months ago when Steve Ballmer, he was part of like a MSNBC conference, something like that, and talking about cryptocurrency and how that might be a part of how they get fans like engaged, fans in the building. Like maybe that will be what they take. And yeah, the future is a weird place, and we're not there yet, but we'll get there.
The future is all digital, man. I have to ask you, because you're a Philadelphia guy, and Otto and I have had this back and forth on this show many times. I'm a believer in the Sixers, man. I think that they are still one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, regardless of what their playoff history has been and what that franchise's history has been the last few years. Do you think that this is finally the year that they bust through the East?
No. Simply put, you know, it's weird, man. They're like sister teams, even before Doc left the Clippers to mm-hmm. go to Philly, in a lot of ways. I mean, they're really good. Doc's been great. Joel's been great. Ben, people don't appreciate that dude unless he's not playing. I think that tip in against the Spurs was the most typical Ben Simmons play of his career to this point, you know? My question with them is almost similar to the Clippers. Like, will they have enough time to shore up the rotation questions, and will they draw the kind of matchup in the first round where they're going to be in a good spot? And those are open questions. And hey, a month from now, we'll know the answers to them.
Absolutely. We're going to have you back during the playoffs, man. All right. But before we get there, what's your NBA Finals matchup? What is it?
Miami Finals matchup is the same one it was. I'm consistent. It's the same.
You don't waver.
Hey man, I'm a different kind of weatherman. You know, if I say it's going to rain Saturday, it's going to rain until it doesn't rain. So, you know, I still had Lakers over Nets. That's what I had in December. That's what I'm going to still have. When the Lakers are eliminated, when the Nets are eliminated, y'all can hit me. I'm accountable.
Awesome. Awesome. We appreciate it, man. Thank you for taking the time and joining us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
That was dope.
Look, I got to admire him. I admire Law for sticking with his prediction and not jumping on and saying the Clippers are going to do whatnot. Don't you?
Oh, absolutely. We've talked about this numerous times on this show. If a team has six good games, I'm riding that bandwagon. But like to not only that, to stick with them. And, you know, like everyone's worried about the Lakers, and we talked about them at the front end. Everyone, you know, and we said it months ago, you know, like when the Nets had their first two games, sold on them right away, right?
Yep.
Man, that's a ballsy move to not alter your predictions at all.
See, okay. I would have said, look, okay, what you said at the time, we got that, but I'd be willing to say, okay, you know, re-up because things change. You know, I mean, Jamal Murray being out for the rest of the year, I mean, that's got to change your mind on some things. It's going to change my mind.
It alters the calculus completely. But I will say this. They 100% do not want to play the Lakers in the first round.
Oh, hell no.
Regardless of who you have to go through in the first, second, or in the finals, like you still want some time to build up to that big matchup with the Lakers, right? Like if you have to play the Lakers right out of the gate and you're still trying to figure out your rotations and who's healthy and who runs well together, then guess what? Even if the Lakers are in that sixth seed, they know what works for them. And that's still an advantageous spot for them.
Well, let's flip it around. I mean, the Lakers, if the Lakers are going to be picked off at any point, you might say, I mean, aside from getting picked off in a play-in game, which is a whole other story, but if they're going to get picked off in at some point, you'd probably say the first round is where they're most vulnerable.
Because they're still going to be trying to work their guys back in. Look, it's the same situation that the Clippers are going through, right?
I guess it is. It just feels like once the Lakers get to a certain point, and I think that point is like 7 to 10 games of playoff basketball, it's going to be a different squad than the one that's, you know, that they're throwing out there now. And once that happens, like it's no longer like you know, what we would have called in a previous season, the late April squad. Now you're going to get like the late May squad or the June squad, and you don't want to see that squad.
No, and to be honest, like if I'm the Clippers, I regardless of where LeBron James is in this stage of his career, and right, like mid-30s, he's defied father time for a long time, and injuries have not really plagued him up until the last few years.
Yeah.
It feels like it's catching up to him, doesn't it?
Feels like, yeah, you know, I mean, you do wonder.
Big injury 2 years ago, relatively healthy in the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Feels like it's coming, and I hate it.
Yeah, no, you know, definitely do. And you do feel like that on some level, like, you know, we've talked before about whether the altered season, the short rest and then the early start and the number of games and now the plan and whether all of that is kind of baked into something that is coming out, you know, producing a rather ugly cake. And I kind of feel like maybe with him, because of what level he plays at and how hard he goes and how much he's needed to be their engine, you know, maybe with him, that I'll give that theory a little bit more deference than, say, like a Steph Curry. But I'm still not going to be a believer until, like, just like Law says, like, until it rains, like, you know, like, I'm going to be like, I'm not seeing it. But I will say this. I think that Clippers probably wind up going against the Mavs. Because, I mean, the Mavs, to me, have the easiest schedule down the road. And because of that, I think that they'll probably inch into that and wind up holding on to the five slot. That's what I see. And so what I think is, you know, the Clippers are going to be taking on Mavs and Luka again, and it'll just be one of those things where the Clippers probably, you know, win in six, or if KP can give them more, maybe they win in seven. But, you know, I mean, either way, I think the Clippers will walk out of that series.
Yeah, and we touched on Luka at the front end of this show. Emotionally, do you feel like he's ready to win a series? Especially a series against two veterans like Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. And Serge Ibaka, who's been there too, right?
If Serge is healthy. Yeah, look, I've said this before, and I feel like this. He is who he is, and you can make somebody more mature in certain ways, but you know, they're at their core, they are who they are. And to say, like, you know, if you're someone who's gotten, you know, technical fouls all season long, and all of a sudden, like, well, I'm not going to get any more technical fouls, like, it doesn't really work that way. You could say it in the press
basketball.
Exactly. You could say it in the press conference, but then you get into that moment where, like, you were pulled on and you didn't get the call, and, like, and all of a sudden fumes, and, like, you start spewing, and it just happens. So,
especially in like a six or seven game series, because by like game four or five, it's already chippy. Guys know each other. They know what sets you're running. They know what plays coming, and the Clippers are going to know how to get under his skin. And so it's coming and it's happening. It's just a matter of if he can reframe himself, and I'm with you. I don't think he can.
Yeah. He'll be somebody who, you know, a couple of years but everybody's different. So, you know, but everyone's different, man.
Absolutely. Well, you ready to put a bow on this one?
Let's do it.
All right, let's go. Time to stick the landing.
All right, Otto, let's go ahead and put a bow on this one. As always, a special thanks to Law Murray for joining us on the show to not only talk some Clips, but also for standing by his prediction. I appreciate that. If you want to give him a follow on Twitter. He's at Law Murray. That's LawMU2RsAY. The NU. He does a great job covering the Clippers for The Athletic. And as always, a special thanks to our producer. His name is Daniel Kramer, and to our editor, Kristen Woolley. Also, big ups to our king of content, our CCO and executive producer, Bruce Bernstein. Hey, if you have not checked out what's going on Pure Hoops Media this week, what's keeping you from it? Here's our rundown of our shows. This week on the Mike Wise Show, Mike's guest is Brian Scalabrine of Sirius XM NBA Radio and NBC Sports Boston. The White Mamba gives his view of the MVP race and, of course, whether or not his beloved Celtics can make hay in the NBA playoffs. Full Court with Fisher and Kay has plenty of great college hoops talk each and every week. Thursdays is Buckets, Boards, and Blocks with Monica McNutt and King McClure. And of course, as always, we round things out with the Pure Hoops podcast each and every Friday with BJ Armstrong and Eric Newman. And of course, Otto and I are back next Tuesday with another great rendition of Catch and Shoot 2.0.
And our big hope this year is that everybody on the planet gets the COVID vaccine so we could finally put this pandemic to an end. But as you know, we are not there yet. So protect yourself and others by wearing a mask, washing your hands, and keeping your distance from others. Please don't forget the medical professionals and the other frontline workers who are doing their job to keep us all safe. So for my partner, Aaron Berlin, I'm Otto Strong. See you next week.
Catch and Shoot 2.0 is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.